cheer a superstar. Oh, man, that's a song, I think, from the 80s, celebrating the Brewers. We're celebrating 50 years of the Brewers on the show today. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Tom Hodricourt. He has covered the Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel since 1985. Took a brief hiatus, I think, in the early 2000s when he covered the Yankees in New York. But he's been doing it a long time for the Brewers, reporting on the Brewers at least. And in addition to his daily news and game coverage of the team, he writes a weekly column during the season. He's also written a book that we're going to talk about today. Oh, is it a fun read? It's called Turning 50, The Brewers Celebrate a Half Century in Milwaukee. It was released on It was just released on Father's Day weekend. So what are your favorite Brewer memories? Who was your favorite player or coach? Join in. I hope you'll give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Tom Hodricourt, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Larry, thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
Oh, man, I tell you what, it's been fun looking through your book. Before we talk about the book, there's a couple of things. I know, was it yesterday they just announced that two of the Brewers have tested positive for COVID? any effect that's going to have on the team and the schedule?
Well, Larry, and I'm out at Miller Park as we speak. The Brewers are having a workout today, summer camp. It's no longer spring training. It's now summer camp. And certainly the weather makes it feel like summer, doesn't it?
Oh, man.
But, I mean, this is what baseball will be living with during these camps and on to the season. The specter of COVID, you know, is going to hang over them like it is with all other sports trying to get going. And Christian Yelich had a very important point that he made the other day. Because players are going to be tested every other day going forward and into the season to try to keep on top of the situation, he said every other day you might lose a teammate. You know, so if someone tests positive, they're going to go into isolation until they no longer have symptoms or no longer test positive. And who knows, you know, that could be any period of time. It might be a week, might be 2 weeks. You know, everybody's going to be different. Some players could be asymptomatic. Others could be symptomatic. So, you know, all teams every season have to worry about players getting injured. And if you recall, Christian Yelich broke his kneecap fouling a pitch off of it last year with 18 games to go and was lost for the rest of the season. So every team lives every year with the possibility that a player could be injured and be lost. But this year it's a whole different, you know, more sinister, if you will, thing at play in that you could lose people to COVID, just like in general society, you know. So that's just the specter that we're going to have this year. And they have a vast protocol that they're implementing to try to avoid that. The manual that each player was given, operation manual, is over 100 pages long. And their lives have changed on and off the field. So, this is a whole different deal. You know, we're not used to seeing coaches out on the field wearing masks, players wearing masks off the field. You know, just from the media standpoint, Larry, we don't have clubhouse access anymore, nor do we get to go on the field. No face-to-face or mask-to-mask conversations with players. We're doing everything on Zoom sessions with them.
So, it's got to be hard when you can't. It's got to be hard when you can't, you know, somebody like you, you know so many. I mean, you have the opportunity to talk one-on-one with people. Well, that kind of goes away then, doesn't it?
Yeah, everything's different this year. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining. I'm just telling you how it is.
Yeah.
We get the bubble. They're trying to keep these guys in to keep them well. So for I know a lot of people are conducting business via Zoom sessions. you know, I know my wife's working at home now. She does all of her meetings on Zoom. So it's just the way of the world now. Everybody's having to make adjustments. But, you know, we're hoping to get baseball back on the field. No one knows with how much certainty that's going to happen. You know, there certainly are a lot of COVID spikes going on through the country now. And if any one team has a COVID spike, we're just not sure. We're just not sure how it's going to go, you know.
Yeah. So we
always joke that baseball's you take baseball one day at a time. That's never been more true. Never been more true than it is this year.
Well, and none of us will none of the fans will be there, which is, you know, I go to quite a few games every year and always have, but I know I've watched many, many more of them on TV, watching Brian Anderson and Bill Schroeder, and then sometimes Matt LePave filling in. So great announcers, man. Of course, on the radio when you're in the car, Bob Uecker and Jeff Levering. Those guys all do a great job. You probably don't get to hear them very often.
No, not very often. This year more so, because we won't be traveling with the team when they go on the road. So, yeah, the Brewers fans are spoiled at what great announcers we have, all those guys you just mentioned. And so those guys are going to be the stars this year, because baseball is going to be a TV and radio sport, not a personally attended sport. So, you know, right out of the chute, the schedule came out yesterday, and the Brewers know they're opening at Wrigley Field. Everybody always talks about what a great atmosphere it is at Wrigley, the friendly confines and so on. Well, this year, the closest that fans will be to the action will be on those rooftops across the street, you know. those seats are probably going to go for thousands, you know.
Well, I got to tell you, well, Wrigley is a fun place to watch a game. There's no doubt about it. I've sat out in that left field, those bleachers out there, and really enjoyed it, even when the Brewers lost. It was fun.
This year's going to be a ghost town. The outfielders will be able to hear the wind rustling through the ivy out there.
Well, the wind was rustling through the ivy in Seattle a long, long time ago, and I tell you, I really enjoy your book. It is so much fun, and you've got so many great photos. But it was really fun for me, just those kind of early years. I'd kind of forgotten, like that first year, there were like 6 days to go from the team to go from Seattle to Milwaukee.
That's true. It was fun for me to delve back into those early years, too, because I didn't start covering the Brewers until 1985. I moved from Virginia to Milwaukee to start covering the Brewers for the old Sentinel, the old Milwaukee Sentinel, yeah, before we became the Journal Sentinel in 95. But my favorite story about the Brewers having to go so quickly from Seattle to Milwaukee after the team was awarded to Bud Selig's group in bankruptcy is the equipment truck left Arizona and went to Las Vegas and waited for word, am I turning left and going to Seattle, or am I turning right and going to Milwaukee? I mean, literally, they didn't know. I have an interview with Ken Sanders in the book.
It was a great interview.
Yeah, and he talks about, you know, not only did we not know who we were playing for, when we heard our team had gone bankrupt, we were wondering if we were going to be paid that year.
And Ken Sanders, by the way, you know, I don't think he ever had, well, I think in the interview he said he had never really planned to stay in Milwaukee, but he wound up staying in Milwaukee, getting into real estate.
Yeah, lives here to this very day. He loved it so much. He's from St. Louis. So there you go, Cardinals fans. Here's a guy that found Milwaukee better than St. Louis, you know, and stayed here all these years. And like you said, became a realtor. You know, back in those days, players weren't paid enough to just take off in the winter. So he got a job in Milwaukee and to stay over the winter. And then before he knew it, when his playing career was done, he had decided to stay here. So, I know it is cool because not many guys live here. You know, Jim Gantner is from Wisconsin, so that's different. Craig Council, the current manager, grew up in Whitefish Bay, and so he still lives there. But most guys, you know, bolted back to their homes. And in the winter in Wisconsin, you're looking for someplace warmer, which is almost every place but Wisconsin.
Betty in Brown Deer has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Betty.
Hi, guys. I just was so excited when the Brewers came back, or when we got a Brewers team again, because I grew up with the original Brewers over at Borchardt Field. And when we were kids, it was minor league is so different because the whole stadium was full of kids who just had the run of the place. And we kind of knew where our parents were sitting. We kind of watched the game, but it was always an event. And then the Braves came, and that was exciting. And then we lost them, but to have a new Brewers team was just so special for us older guys. And I want to thank you for doing an anniversary show.
Oh, well, and this anniversary book, Betty, you ought to take a look at it. It's Tom's book is titled Turning 50, The Brewers Celebrate a Half Century in Milwaukee. I know you'd get a kick out of that. Well, that was kind of a nice memory, Tom.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, yeah, the Milwaukee Brewers of the old American Association, she was referring to the minor league team over at Borchardt Field. That's all they had for a while, you know. And I know the 5 years, Bud Selig told me those 5 years between when the Braves left town and when the Brewers came to town seemed interminable to him, the longest 5 years of his life, you know, no Major League Baseball. He actually had the White Sox come up and play some games in County Stadium to try to just keep baseball alive in Milwaukee best he could. And, quick turnaround from Seattle to Milwaukee. You know, they had to rip the Seattle name off the uniforms, sew Brewers names on there. The Brewers lost that first game 12-0 to the California Angels at County Stadium. And Bud Selig, who was a notoriously poor loser, he'll tell you that, said that was the only day he ever didn't care, you know, that they lost. It didn't bother him because he was so happy to have baseball back. And, you know, there were some lean years, Larry, in those early 70s. You know, that Seattle team was the Seattle team had only been in Seattle 1 year. They were an expansion franchise, so they weren't very good.
And it was 92 games, I think, that Ken Sanders interview, if I remember.
Yeah, they lost 90 games a lot those first few years. And, you know, the worm turned in the late 70s. George Bamberger became manager. They really collected a lot of talent. They drafted Robin Yount and Paul Molitor, traded for Cecil Cooper. You know, they started really getting their talent level back up. So, but just to get back to the Pods for 1 minute. So they only existed for 1 year. So they only had one number one draft pick in their history. Yeah. And guess who it was? Foreman Thomas.
Yeah.
You know, and he became a favorite player in Milwaukee because of his blue collar attitude. He'd go out into the tailgating parties in the parking lot and have beers with fans, you know. So he was the perfect Brewer. But he tells the funniest story about being drafted by the Seattle Pilots in 1969. He was grew up in rural South Carolina, kind of a, you know, simple rural good kid, not that sophisticated, not that worried about world affairs, basically just playing baseball and waiting to see where that might take him. And he said his mom, you know, the phone call came to the family home in South Carolina that he had been drafted by the Seattle Pilots, and she called him in and she said, "Gora, you've been drafted by the Pilots." And the Vietnam War was going on, and he thought he had been drafted into the Coast Guard or something, you know. The Pilots, who the heck are the Pilots? You know, am I going into the service here? She goes, "No, Gorman, it's a baseball team." And so he was just so relieved, you know, that it was a baseball team.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a very popular player. I know somebody who named their new parakeet Gorman Thomas.
Well, so I wonder if he drank beer, if that parakeet drank beer. Yeah, but I mean, you know, we don't have nicknames for players in modern baseball like we did in the old days. And he, you know, became Storman Gorman, and yeah. Everybody knew him by that name. A lot of his teammates just called him Storman, you know, hey, Storman, you know. So he and some of the boys could often be found down on Blue Mound Road drinking beer in the local establishments after games. And so, yeah, I know when they traded him, Brewers fans thought it was the most unpopular trade in club history when they traded him to Cleveland.
Yeah. Tom Hardercourt, our guest today, he has been covering the Brewers since 1985, and now with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His new book is called Turning 50, The Brewers Celebrate a Half Century in Milwaukee. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. There's a new book out. It's called Turning 50, The Brewers Celebrate a Half Century in Milwaukee. And our guest is the author, Tom Hardercourt. Covered the Brewers since 1985. Great to have him with us today. Lots of callers online, and let's go back to the phones. And Richard in Two Rivers, it's your turn. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, thanks for taking my phone call. Larry, I caught a 29.5-pound king the other night.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, it was fun. In seven rainbows. But I used to be Well, I worked in physical therapy. I retired, but I used to be a trainer for the Minnesota Twins, and I used to work with the pitching staff, and I had many players live with me in AAA, and I, you know, Ken Herbeck fished out of my boat, and Greg Olson was the manager of the team who did the Atlanta chop when he broke his ankle in the World Series, and my question is, like, what is your, I mean, you've been always, I'll always be loyal to the Twins because of it, but, and I love them, I love Miller Park and I love the Brewers, but, I mean, the Twins, you know, are the Twins, and what is your favorite memory of the Brewers playing the Twins?
Ah, so, Tom, do you have a memory of the Brewers playing the Twins?
I'll just turn it around to something that modern Brewers fans make fun of, the Twins, because the Brewers built a new ballpark and had the sense to put a roof on it, and the Twins built a new ballpark and didn't have the sense to put a roof on it. And Brewers fans will tell you Twins fans love coming to Milwaukee to when the Brewers and the Twins play, because they know that they're going to be in creature comfort, both in terms of temperature and dryness, and a lot of them who make it out to Target Field in Minnesota, especially early in the season, will tell you it's a gorgeous ballpark, but you freeze to death in it. So, they would say it's more like ice fishing there, not just regular fishing. So I do get those comments a lot. And, you know, the Brewers and the Twins were declared regional rivals in interleague play years ago, meaning that both teams get home series against each other. And it's really great Brewers play in Minnesota for the fans in the western part of the state, like out in Eau Claire and La Crosse, because it's actually a shorter drive to Minneapolis than it is to Milwaukee. And then The Minnesota fans, you know, like coming to Milwaukee too. So I do think that's been good to keep that. When the Brewers left the American League in 1998, they lost all those series that they played against the Twins. But then they, when interleague play became a staple of the game, and they declared the Brewers and the Twins their these regional rivals, they started playing home and home series again. And even in this 60 games, short schedule, Larry, this year. We're only playing 60 games instead of 162. Because they're trying to play regionally and not travel as much, because, you know, travel's a kind of a tough thing during COVID, the Brewers and the Twins will still play those home and home series. And I know a lot of the fans won't get to come to the games anymore, but they will see him on TV. And I know that rivalry has remained a very, very fierce yet friendly rivalry. And so,
it's interesting to me, Tom, because the Minnesota Vikings pretty much are hated. And in Badger sports, the Minnesota hockey team and the Minnesota football team are really hated. But there's not that kind of feeling with the Twins and the Brewers.
No, I think it's, like I said, more of a friendly rivalry, Larry.
Yeah.
So, they get after, but, you know, Midwesterners are just, you know, polite people, nice people. You know, it's not like these Cubs fans that come up and misbehave at Miller Park, you know, and get the Brewers fans all worked up. You know, a lot of people call Miller Park Wrigley Field North because so many Cubs fans come up. But I think the Twins and the Brewers fans, it's more a friendly rivalry. Hey, you know, let's get after each other, but let's be nice. Let's play nice, you know.
Yeah.
Let's get along together, and I think they do, you know. But I do know, you know, in regular times when the Brewers play at Target Field and I'm there, and like Braun gets a hit or Yelich gets a hit or something big happens for the Brewers, you hear a lot of cheering. You know, you hear a lot of cheering. And the Twins were really good last year. You know, they won over 100 games. So
yeah.
it's cool that they're both good. Both teams are good at the same time because it makes the games even more fierce.
Yeah, absolutely. Charlie in Fish Creek has something for us. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, good afternoon, or morning, actually. A couple of things. First of all, I grew up as a Cub fan because I was in those gap years between the Braves and the Brewers. So, and I come from a family of Cub fans, 9 children, all Cub fans, dad Cub fan. But I jumped ship when the Brewers moved to the National League because I lived farther away and I couldn't really, you know, get any games. So I could listen to you, Bill, because he was rebroadcast up here in Sturgeon Bay. So I just want to relay a couple of favorites. Tommy Harper was my favorite American League player back in, 69, 70, when I think he got to the Brewers. And then I skipped school on opening day in 1980. I was a senior in high school. Drove down with my friends. Went to the game. It was cold. It was at County Stadium. It was miserably cold. But Sixto Lescano hit a grand slam home run in the bottom of the ninth to win the game, and it was the most ultimate opening day in my experience ever. It was awesome. I'll get off the phone.
Oh, thanks, Charlie. You're right about that.
Larry, I was going to say, Charlie's from one of my favorite cities, Fish Creek. Man, Door County's nice. I love Door County. So good to hear from him. So, yeah, so that memory, that Sixto Lescano memory he had, Larry, you know, Sixto Lescano, I still believe is the only major leaguer to hit grand slams on opening day twice. He did it twice. But that one he was talking about when he beat Boston, that's like one of the most electric, a walk-off grand slam. Does it get any better? Not just a walk-off home run, but a walk-off grand slam. I mean, that's the stuff of dreams, you know? And then the Brewers used Sixto Lescano in that huge trade with St. Louis in 81 to get Fingers, Vukovich, and Simmons. So he paid off there, too. They put him in that big trade. And that trade... You know, Larry, that trade is really the thing that finally put the Brewers over the top. When they got Raleigh Fingers and Pete Vukovich and Ted Simmons, you know, before the 81 season, and then certainly in 82 when they went to the playoffs, Bud Selig will tell you to this day and fight you over it that they would have won that World Series if they would have had Raleigh Fingers. You know, he was hurt. He was hurt.
Yep.
And, you know, the Cardinals had their closer, Bruce Sutter, and he dominated the Brewers in that World Series, and the Brewers did not have their closer and would have trouble in the late innings without Raleigh Fingers. So Jim Gantner told me, that interview is in this book, Turning 50, he said when they got Fingers, it was a game changer because the Brewers' offense was so prolific, but they would often blow leads without a big-time closer. And he said, Raleigh Fingers in his first year with the Brewers in 1981, it was a strike-split season, but he was the Cy Young winner and the MVP as a relief pitcher. That's incredible.
Yeah. He was such a blessing to the Brewers. I saw him pitch in person, and then I was there when they brought him back to recognize him. Gee, now how many years back is that? Not too many. When the Brewers brought him back with his family, it was he was great. And you know, here in 82, we, as you write about and point out in the book, we had, well, really Paul Molitor and Ted Simmons really were central to winning the league championship that year, and then we lost to St. Louis, and I've never forgiven the Cardinals for that.
That was tough, but, wasn't it? The Cardinals have just been the bane of the Brewers throughout their history. You know, they knocked them out in 2011 when they were getting very close to the World Series, you know. And so the Cardinals have, you know, really, really been, you know, a nemesis of the Brewers so many times. But the Brewers are the last couple of years have been back in the playoffs. And so, you know, that rivalry continues to be fierce. The Brewers are in the new 60-game schedule. Their home opener is now against the Cardinals, you know, so on July 31st. So they remain a fierce rival in the NL Central. And, you know, one of the things I'd like to point out about the book that we haven't really made clear is this is mostly a photo book, Larry. I wrote the copy, but this is a photo book. And this is in conjunction with the Journal Sentinel. And one of the keys to doing a book with my own newspaper was we had access, KCI Sports Publishing and myself had access to the newspaper's vast photo archives. And my publisher, Peter Clark, and I, man, we had some fun going to the paper and going through the archives and finding photos. And there's some fantastic photos in this book. And one of my favorite ones from the early 80s, we have a picture, a photo of an 11-year-old Craig Counsell posing between Raleigh Fingers and Deion James. He has a little trophy. And this guy grew up to be the manager. You know,
couldn't believe it. I actually made a note of that and underlined it because I wanted to be sure to bring it up. It is such a cool picture.
I mean, how fantastic is that? An 11-year-old Craig Counsell. You know, his dad worked in the front office in the 80s and 90s. And Craig, we often saw Craig running around out there at County Stadium in his Little League uniform. And so, you know, I have a very unusual relationship with the manager of the Milwaukee Brewers, Craig Counsell. I knew him when he was a kid. Then I covered him as a player. He actually, his final season in the major leagues was with the Brewers. And then now as a manager, you know, thank God that it's not always true that familiarity breeds contempt. We'd have a lot of contempt for each other.
And he seems like he's such a smart guy and seems like such a nice person.
He's just, he's the perfect guy for them. When they rebuilt the team, you know, he had the patience to wait for them to be good again and to guide them through that and then lead them to the playoffs the last 2 years. And now in this unusual COVID world, he's again got that even-keeled hand on him. He's very patient, very even-keeled, very positive person. He looks for the good rather than the bad. So even in these tough times, he looks for the good in this COVID world. And he's like the perfect guy to lead them at this time. And I tell him all the time, you were born to manage the Brewers, but you know, your dad worked for the team. You're out here as a kid. He still lives in Whitefish Bay, you know? And if you know where he lives on any certain day, you might drive down his road and you might see Craig Counsell cutting the grass on a riding lawnmower painted in the Brewers colors.
Bruce in Madison, let's give you a chance. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for calling.
Hello, gentlemen. I've got a couple of things. I have a Brewers memory. When I was living in Waukesha and working in Whitefish Bay, I drove by right as a crane was going down, the big crane at Miller Park. And so I'll, you know, like the JFK assassination, I'll never forget that because I watched it go down. But I'm 67 years old. And when I was a kid, of course, the Braves were playing at County Stadium. And so I was just a little kid. My dad took me to games and they had the national anthem. And I always thought that it was the home of the Braves. At the end of the national, I never knew it was a national anthem. I thought it was the Milwaukee Braves song.
Well, I mean, it was the home of the Braves, so it was both things.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I'm a big Brewers fan, and I just wanted to share that because I know it's not with the Brewers, but I saw Hank Aaron and Warren Spahn and Eddie Matthews and all those guys play. So I really have fond memories of that.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, those are the gold. Those are some golden days of ball in Milwaukee with the Braves. So you know, Larry, it's so interesting that the caller just brought up Henry Aaron because one of the real privileges and joys of my job covering baseball has been that I got to be a personal friend of Henry Aaron because my very first baseball assignment was for the Richmond Times-Dispatch in Richmond, Virginia. I covered the AAA Richmond Braves, Atlanta's farm club, their top farm club at the time. And so guess, as I'm covering that beat in the late 70s and early 80s, Larry, guess who the farm director is of the Braves back then? Henry Aaron. And as all farm directors did, he would go to the farm clubs to watch the players play. When he came to Richmond, you know, Henry Aaron, if you're just Joe Smith farm director, you can sit in the stands and watch your team play, your farm teams play, and no one bugs you. When you're Henry Aaron, you cannot sit in the stands, you know, and watch the team play. So he would come up and sit in the press box and sit next to me. And, my wife worked for that team. That's how we met. And so she was actually a coworker of Henry Aaron. She was an Atlanta Braves employee because Atlanta owned that team. And so he knew Trish very well, my wife, as a coworker. And then he would sit next to me in the press box. And I got to know him personally because we would just sit and chat. And one of the great joys of my life, well, and one of the privileges of my job is that I can call Henry Aaron a friend. And it's been so fantastic. I can hardly ever get my wife to go to a baseball banquet, but a couple of years ago, I said, Trish, I got to go to this banquet. She goes, oh, I said, do you want to come? She goes, no. I said, Henry Aaron's going to be there. She goes, what time does it start?
Oh, that's great. And, you know, there was a time, well, he of course played for the Braves and then in Atlanta, but then write about him coming back to the Brewers.
He finished his career, came full circle. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool. And, you know, Bruce mentioned the new stadium, Miller Park, the stadium. And that was such a contentious time. I'd kind of forgotten about that, how bad it was until I picked up your book and was reading through it again.
Yeah. Yeah, Bud Seale had called some of the things that were going on back then and some of the comments that were being made and some of the speeches that were made. He often refers to it as Machiavellian behavior. And for those who don't know what Machiavellian behavior means, it's not considered good behavior.
Well, it was one of the cool things in you know, around that time was a quote that you have from Bob Uecker. When on the last game played in Milwaukee County Stadium, it was here that the boys became men and men became champions and champions became legends. I've been here as a fan and a player in the last 30 years as a broadcaster, but tonight it's the final curtain. Time to say goodbye. We'll never forget you. What was will always be. So long, old friend, and good night, everybody. As he always says at the end.
Good speech, huh? That was a good speech, wasn't it?
So, man,
you know, Larry, I just mentioned one of the true privileges of my job is being around Henry Aaron and being a friend. How about me getting to be around Bob Uecker for 35 years? Oh my goodness!
You know?
This is his 50th year with the Brewers too. So not only did COVID rob the team of celebrating their 50th anniversary, it robbed Bob Uecker of calling games for the 50th year. But lo and behold, news came the other day that when they start playing these games, Bob Uecker is going to be calling the games at Miller Park once again. How great is that?
It's a real treat to turn on the radio. And, you know, I always liked the games, liked turning on the radio when the game got out of hand and the Brewers were getting beat badly.
Yeah.
Because he would start, he's always done this. He'd start telling stories.
Yes.
And he would keep you listening even if they were losing by 10 runs because you wanted to hear what he would come up with next.
Yes, a lot of people thought he was the team's most valuable player for the decade of the 90s when the team was not very good. So you still got to listen to Bob Uecker, you know. So yeah, we made sure we got some photos of him in there because he's just an iconic person. Iconic. So a funny little aside here for today, Larry. I was on TMJ this morning to talk about the schedule coming out, and I saw they had Bob Uecker scheduled too. And then I said, am I going before or after Bob Uecker? And they said before. And I said, thank goodness. I said, I do not want to follow that act. You know, I got no chance of people listening.
Well, Tom, I tell you what, this has been a lot of fun. What's your favorite memory of all those years?
I think 2008, when the Brewers finally broke through and ended the 26-year playoff drought. You know, they won that day against the Cubs, so that made it special because the Brewers fans got to see them beat the Cubs. And then you had to wait to see if the Mets would lose at home to the Marlins. So everybody it was like a watch party going on after the actual game. And they had the game up on the big board, and the fans, everybody stayed in their seats. And then they saw that the Brewers would indeed win that wild card berth and get back to the playoffs. And it was party time at Miller Park. And I just on a personal note, I told you I started covering the Brewers in '85, so I had never seen a playoff team. You know, I missed '82, and I was beginning to wonder: A, am I going to live long enough to see it? And B, will I stay employed long enough to see it?
Well, Tom, boy, this has been fun. You put together a great book here. I love all the photos and your stories we haven't gotten into. You have so many good articles. You know, your interview with Ryan Braun and with all the rest of them are a lot of fun, but the photos are really something. You put together a great book. Thank you so much. I hope we have a chance to do this again.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, this is a keepsake book, so it hasn't been our usual baseball season, but this is still the Brewers' 50th anniversary, and this is a good photo book, so I hope people will buy it because it is a keepsake book. It's something worth having.
Yeah. Tom, thanks again. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it. Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and his new book is, it came out Father's Day, actually. It's Turning 50, The Brewers Celebrate a Half Century in Milwaukee. And we didn't touch on even a 1% of all that's in the book, but it's sure a lot of fun talking with him. Yeah, there's the seventh inning stretch. We get a little of that music to take us out of our interview with Tom Hodricourt, and we'll probably have some other music to bring us into the next section of the program when we take a look at auto racing and car racing and Road America. That's coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.